James from SurvivalPunk.com.
And this is Couch Potato Mike. How you doing, James?
Wonderful. Yourself?
I am potatoy and couchy.
Booyah! Booyah. There you go.
Yeah, that's for that one fan out there that suggested that. But how you been doing?
Not too bad. Excited to...
So I'm looking forward to the interview we're doing with my old friends Justin and Cheryl at CrookedTreeFarmstead.com.
Yeah, you know what? It's interesting. It was such a fast-paced interview that I had maybe too many questions and not enough time, so maybe we'll bring them back on in the future when we have not a boiling hot room like you have right now. And
yes, as James sits here breaking the fourth frickin' wall, yeah, we've already actually done the interview, and now we're doing the intro.
Well, yeah, we've done the interview.
We just took the magic out of it.
I meant to rib Justin and Cheryl on... So after I did the Survival Podcast interview a couple years ago, Justin sent me an email. He came to our website. He was like, "Hey, we're punk rock homesteaders. We like what you're doing. It's awesome." You know, and then some back and forth emails. We became friends on Facebook. So, and that's been a couple years. You know, we talk, fairly regularly.
Mm-hmm.
You know, once a couple times a week, we usually. So yeah, good friends. I sent them out some shirts and some patches a couple months ago. Good people, and they were actually the first people I ever interviewed on the blog. I did a written interview.
Mm-hmm.
Written interviews are horrible. Now that I have a podcast with my best friend in the world, I will never go back to written interviews because they're the worst. Like, it's the very definition of hurry up and wait. It's question. Go bake a freaking cake and come back an hour later when they type out the giant response. Not just them, but like the couple people I interviewed via like Facebook Messenger on my computer. I just copy and paste it, which was neat because if you copy and paste from Facebook Messenger to do an interview, it pastes your pictures in. So you see my face, and then you see my word bubble. That's and then awesome. You see their face and their word bubble. So it works out good that way.
Huh.
It's just antagonizingly hard. You know, whereas like to do an hour interview via Messenger, you get like a terribly tiny amount of info. An hour podcast interview, we get so much information done just because the speed at which you can talk and communicate ideas is so much faster.
And all of our listeners out there should really be looking forward to this because this is a great interview. We talk about guns, we talk about holsters, and we talk about how funny it is babies think terrorists are.
We talk about homesteading and goats and horny goats and replacing the fencing.
Absolutely. So look forward to that. But coming up now, if you're needing to buy new fencing for your goats that keep escaping, and you go to a place that does not accept a U.S. currency, you know, the Federal Trade Reserve and all that, they might accept precious metals. You know where a good place to get those precious metals would be?
You're taking too long. JMBullion.com.
JMBullion.com, yes, where you can go and buy silver, where you can go and buy gold, where you can go and buy platinum. Are they still selling any of that stuff that they reprinted off the sunken ship?
I don't know. I can check.
Well, if they are, buy it there. If not, well, buy the other stuff, because they have plenty of good stuff. Precious metals, gold, silver, always a great investment.
Always a great investment. Also, free shipping on all orders.
Absolutely. So, find survivalpunk.com. Well, apparently you've already found it if you're listening to our podcast. And find the banner on the right-hand side.
They also have copper rounds.
They have copper now.
Yeah, well, yeah, I mean...
That's a buffalo.
Well,
that's a bear. Well, that's an eagle.
Panda copper. Yeah, I might get a panda copper.
Why are those coins rectangular?
Those are bars.
Those are bars?
Those are bars. Hmm. 1 ounce, 10 ounce, 10 ounce, yeah. So, yeah, I mean, I know some people that used to buy, like, 10-ounce bars. I mean, that's a brick of silver.
Good Lord.
I mean, yeah, $240.
Well, yeah, you think. But find the banner on the right-hand side of survivalpunk.com for JM Bullion. Click on there and start making some wise, wise investments for your future.
Yes.
All right, you know what else you could find on that banner on the right-hand side of survivalpunk.com?
Well Food Co.
Well Food Co.
Yes. John Wellborn, a former NFL star, and his wife, Kate.
Inventor of the paleo MRE.
Inventor of the paleo MRE, yeah, along with along with Rob Wolf. They got the Paleo MREs reviewed on the website. Amazing. Mm-hmm. Then the Carne Bars, I love them. I mean, for a go bag, just toss them in there. You've got protein, fat.
What does carne mean?
Carne. It's like Spanish for... I mean, Spanish, carne means meat, meat bar.
Oh, okay, meat bar.
Yeah.
Why didn't they just say meat bar?
God, come on, we're on that again. So, Well Food Co., please go to the banner on the left-hand margin, click it, and then pick up some Paleo MREs, carne bars, or, you know what, if you're feeling like you deserve a treat, buy one of their Paleo cookies, because those things are amazing.
Paleo cookies would be really great to eat around a campfire, especially if you're out in a survival situation.
Yes.
And you know, if you're camping in a survival situation, you know where you should go?
CampingSurvival.com, of course.
Absolutely. What can you find over at CampingSurvival.com?
You know what? I went to their website and dug in deep, and then went all the dark alleys of the website for when I brought them out as a sponsor, and I wanted to, you know, talk about them. And,
their website has dark alleys?
Their website is so big it has dark alleys. It was everything I was looking for, they had there at great prices.
Wow.
To be honest, the only thing they did not have that I didn't see any of was, like, tactical gear. That's fine. But for everything, for every, like, homesteading, camping, survivalism, they had everything. They are going to be my go-to place to get fish antibiotics because they have the best prices, period. And I want to say they have free shipping on some of the fish antibiotics and certain other things.
That's pretty
not
awesome.
Everything, but yeah, certain things, yeah, free shipping.
Awesome. So find them over in the banner on the right hand side, Camping Survival. Click on there and get prepared to go out in the wilderness with your fish antibiotics
or stay at home.
And just remember to all of our listeners out there, the Survival Punk Army still wants you. You get all sorts of great stuff when you join up with the Survival Punk.
Well Food Co., speaking for example, you get a discount there at Well Food Co. I'm going to hit up Camping Survival to get them a discount.
Absolutely, and you'll get exclusive content that's only available to Survival Punk Army members, including a new podcast that's going to be coming out exclusive to our members. If you want to hear it, you got to sign up. Survival Punk Army wants you!
And with that, let's bring on Justin and Cheryl from the CrookedTreeFarmstead.com. All right, so it's our great pleasure to welcome on to the Survival Punk podcast some good friends, Justin and Cheryl from the CrookedTreeFarmstead.com. How are you guys doing tonight?
Good.
Awesome.
Okay, why don't you tell us a little bit about what goes on at CrookedTreeFarmstead.com. What's going on over there?
Well, pretty much just a blog that we started. We actually started a different one and kind of merged, too, as time went on. When we decided to move from the suburbs in Colorado out to southwestern Michigan to start our own homestead, basically, we eventually would like to get off the grid. We're still a ways away, quite a ways away from that. But then we kind of added together that concept with basically a web page for the business side of our homestead that we raise dairy goats, we raise chickens, turkeys, all that, and so we can kind of merge the blog with the business, and that's where you get the website.
Now, what initiated the exodus out of Colorado?
Horrible cost of living.
Yeah.
Horrible, horrible cost of living. You can't grow anything in the area that we were at. We did raised beds. You know, we tried. We had tons of topsoil trucked in. You still really couldn't grow a whole lot without a lot of really intensive management, and we didn't have the space to really do the intensive management that we would have needed to be able to actually grow what we wanted to grow
or
to support our family.
To pump the money into a fairly extensive irrigation system.
Exactly.
And even then, after the weather just out there doesn't support it, and you could have a really rocking garden going, and between the locusts and the hailstorms and stuff like that, it just isn't hospitable out there.
Well, and we just wanted to get out of yet another state that's in the constant state of water crisis.
Right.
Yeah. What is one state that is not in a state of water crisis? The state of Michigan.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Not it's
here, so.
And you can save your rainwater in Michigan, right?
Yes. Right. Yes, you can.
Yeah, Colorado is one of, if I believe, correctly, is it was one of the states you cannot.
Our neighbors right. were ticketed in Colorado for saving their own rainwater.
And that's about the stupidest law I've ever heard of. I mean, I'm sorry, I don't want to start up an old rant that I did on a previous episode. Outlawing saving rainwater, though, it's just, I'm sorry, it's retarded, but I'm interrupting you. Go ahead.
It is. Well, and at the same time, the difference in the cost of living that we're paying less on a mortgage now than we were for our home on 11 acres with a giant barn, with a, you know, decent, a nice house.
Than a two-bedroom apartment.
Yeah, two-bedroom apartment
mm-hmm.
than we had
wow.
in Colorado. We're paying less on a mortgage now for this place. 11 acres, and 5 acres of that is beautiful wood.
10 years later.
Yeah, 10 years later.
Yeah, I was actually in a similar situation a few years back. I was living, me and my wife and my daughter at the time, we were living in a duplex paying $500 a month on a tiny little space with hardly any backyard and a horrible neighbor. And then we bought this place out here with 5 acres, set up a home on it. I mean, and we're paying less than $400 a month on it that way.
Yeah.
Yeah.
How much are you paying now?
Way to do it.
Yeah. Yeah, that's I'm going to work on not paying anything. That's my goal.
Yeah, come on, James. Get on the bandwagon.
Yeah.
You're late.
I'm working on it.
Oh, yeah. And I tell you, dude, there is no feeling better than paying off a mortgage. That is just an awesome, awesome feeling. Like, I am out of debt now.
Well,
yeah.
Suck it.
Hopefully that will eventually happen for us. We will see. We're relatively new into this new particular mortgage, but we will keep the fingers crossed, and if the zombies end up rising, then who cares?
Well, if the zombies end up rising, I would recommend stopping paying on the mortgage.
Yeah.
Exactly.
I think that's probably why so many people are all about the zombie apocalypse and there's no bills. And
yep.
Yeah, you'd think modern-day contracts would have some kind of a zombie escape clause in it, but what you gonna do?
Yeah. Stupid bill collectors would probably still keep... They'd tack your mortgage note onto a zombie.
Zombie. Hey. Zombie bill collectors. They eat your brains and your bank accounts.
Yeah. So, how did you guys get into prepping and survivalism?
Well, that's what... for me, it was... I was living in the apartment in Denver, and I think it's pop culture, just a lot like you... James with the zombie movies, and when I tell people that, if they know my interest in particular with survivalism or prepping or whatever it is people want to call it, is that you know, just watching zombie movies, and it seemed silly to say, but it actually got me asking myself some real questions in a small apartment, like what would I do, how would I take care of my family if, you know, we couldn't leave the apartment, or you know, there's no cavalry gonna come save me, and it really kind of started making me look around and realize truly how fragile things were, and it was funny that the 4 years of the army and, you know, living in Korea for a year and being in Iraq, and those things didn't really trigger it so much. I think it's just because I always had the army to take care of me, but zombie movies got through to me that. Actually fragile things are.
Awesome. Cheryl, what you got you into it?
Well, we actually had an occasion, I believe, when was it? It was December of 2006, and we had our oldest daughter, and then we had our second daughter, who was about not quite a year and a half old, and I was 8 months pregnant with our third daughter. And our second daughter ended up tripping and falling and knocking a tooth out, and we couldn't get it to stop bleeding.
Wow.
And
wow.
It was completely snowed in. And, you know, I got so upset I was having contractions, and it just kind of hit me that, wait a minute, we are snowed in. We do not have the supplies to potentially save our daughter's life if this, for any reason, did not stop bleeding.
Mm-hmm.
If I labor, we have nothing to... take care of that, and I don't know what to do. We're almost out of food. This is ridiculous. Why didn't we plan better? That luckily everything was all right, and she actually, you know, has two front teeth now, thankfully, at 9 years old. But nevertheless, it was just a really ridiculous situation, and realizing that our lack of planning could have potentially cost our child's per life.
Absolutely. So, something like that can really be a wake-up call.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. I mean, you couldn't get... They were literally airlifting people off the roof of buildings to try to get them to hospitals because of that blizzard. It was that bad. And, you know, she's just pouring blood out of her mouth, one-year-old baby, and we couldn't fix it. And just made me realize I never wanted to be scared like that ever again, that I wanted to make sure that I did what a mother's supposed to do and took care of my kids ahead of time.
Now, how prepared do you guys feel for emergency situations these days, knowing what you now know?
Quite a bit more prepared. We still do have more that we need to do. We do have a lot more knowledge than we used to. The thing that I'm getting into now is medicinal herbs, now that I can actually grow an herb garden that, you know, is going to stay put. And now that we're actually where we're going to be, we do have a lot more emergency supplies, but we do have kind of emergency plans of if we did have to, you know, get out, that this is where we could go, and we're definitely in a much better place than we were.
I find it funny, though, that it was a blizzard snowstorm that got you into prepping, and then you leave Colorado and go to Michigan?
Hey, you know, I don't mind the snow.
See,
I didn't have a whole lot of fun hauling 5-gallon buckets of water out to the barn through that polar vortex bullshit that was going on last year.
Oh.
Or earlier this year, rather, but... You know, it wasn't as much even a snowstorm as it was just the fact that there was a naturally occurring emergency that we were not prepared for, and then something happened that could have really been a much more serious situation.
Right. See, now, we didn't have that situation down here. We were in what was called the Snow Dome.
Snow Dome.
And if you looked at Doppler radar and everything on the map, it was funny. You'd watch all the weather literally move around us and leave us in this big hole looking down from the sky of no weather whatsoever.
Actually sounds kind of nice compared to what we went through.
Because if you watch the news at the time, the entire rest of the country was, like, dealing with, like, the worst winter ever and, like, snow like you wouldn't believe.
And
we had none.
Yeah, we're hearing about states south of us getting snowed in and stuff. Atlanta, Georgia got a bunch of snow, and we're sitting here sweating. It was just frustrating. I have two kids, and they were just sitting there wondering, are we ever going to get to build a snowman? What is the snow you speak of, Daddy? Why is the ground still green?
Well, we really could have loaned you some, because we had some 6-foot drifts up against the side of our barn.
Wow.
You
told us to let you have some. We couldn't even let our kids go out and play, because A, it was so cold. B, if a breeze picked up and dropped some snow off the roof, it could have buried them, and we wouldn't have found them.
Oh, absolutely. So I spent a winter up in North Dakota a few years back. When I first got there, there was 4.5 feet of snow on the ground. There was a blizzard moving in, and everybody was remarking on how mild of a winter they were having.
Yeah, pretty much. Pretty much.
You get that. That's why I like the South. So,
woolly worms say it's going to be a nice mild winter up here, and then the meteorologists say it's going to be a terrible winter. So we're going to see who wins. The old farmers with the woolly worms or the modern technology. We'll have to see.
See, I'd heard something about this possibly being like a really bad winter coming up, which sucks because I'm going to be off grid this winter.
Yeah, but they said the same thing about last winter.
Well, that's true. Maybe Snow Dome will come back.
Oh, boy.
So when you guys first got your homestead, what big problems did you run into at first?
Probably goat fencing.
Yeah.
Goat fencing.
Oh, goats are escape artists.
Right, they're ninjas.
And ours especially, that they would get out regardless. It didn't matter what. We tried electric fencing, and they would just hop through, ignoring the shock. And they'd always come up and sit on our porch, and I'd walk past the kitchen door, and there would be my goats, all 6 of them sitting there on the porch just looking in at me like, hey, check out what we did.
Oh, my goodness.
Yeah, a couple of years back, I heard about this situation down in Australia where the goats and sheep, I don't know if you know what a cattle gate is, but it's basically the series of bars that, you know, anything with hooves can't walk across it. Well, almost all at once across the country, these goats and sheep learned that if you walked up to the edge of it, laid down on your back and rolled over it, you could get out.
What?
Awesome.
So goats are a lot like Velociraptors from Jurassic Park then.
Yeah.
I would have liked to have been there to see it the first time it was done.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. That first goat was a genius.
Now, well, I used to have a goat named Forrest, and he always got out.
I would have to say, I believe goats are smarter than a lot of dogs. But, you know, I have a goat that she always knows when I'm pulling up outside. Even if the doors are closed, even if I'm in someone else's car, it doesn't matter any capacity of me pulling up outside, and she'll start yelling for me. Other people pull up outside, nothing. Even with the doors closed, she can't see anything. She knows it's me.
Now, when you say yelling, does she actually sound like a goat, or does she sound like a screaming person? Because I've heard both.
She does sound, she sounds like a pissed off old man. I actually sent James a Snapchat not too long ago of, I pulled up out front, and she was yelling at me, and, yeah, I sent it to a couple of people on Snapchat, but me calling back to her, and her calling right back to me, and, yeah, she kind of sounds like a pissed off old man.
Oh, my goodness.
Getting angry about something.
We used to have some goats live next door to us. I mean, in the middle of the night, we'd hear stuff like, ah!
See,
that's all you're going to be hearing, anyone's going to be hearing around here in about a month when breeding season kicks in. Oh, we have four intact males.
Oh, wow.
Four bucks.
And oh, my goodness.
Once they get going, that's pretty much all you hear is the and all that craziness going.
Well, make sure you get some cameras going, because I love watching goats. They're just, they're nature's own psychos.
We're actually, yes, they are. We're actually gonna do more with the YouTube channel. We're gonna, I have been writing for Heritage Homesteaders, but they're actually closing up shop as of September 1st. And
oh, wow.
All the videos that I uploaded for their channel, I get use of again.
Oh, sweet.
Yeah, I'm actually gonna be putting some of those up, and there's some good old goat person and some other good stuff like that. So I'll get them up on our channel as well.
That's, I don't want to say anything right now. I don't really know when this podcast is going to air, probably 2 weeks from now. But someone else is closing up shop, and it took me by surprise. I'll tell you after the interview.
Okay.
But that's weird, because I'd went to the Heritage Homesteader sites a few times. I mean, mostly just because you, Cheryl, you posted your work on there. But they look pretty good.
There's other stuff going on that I don't know if I'm at. I'm really saying things just because I do know the
right.
And edit this out, please. But you know, just
which means it will not get edited out.
Okay, so
as I say, don't even tell me, because you know I'm not going to edit it out. We'll just do that off air.
Let me down.
Well, you're back on track. I think probably the biggest challenge with us because of the fencing was the fact that neither Cheryl or I had ever really raised animals. And so a lot of the stuff when we got, you know, initially we were interested in preparedness, which then kind of evolved into homesteading stuff. And we, you know, first started out with chickens, which is like the gateway.
The gateway drug.
Right, the gateway drug. Addiction into everything else. So that was the thing when you're setting up fencing, you know, really had no concept on the true destructive nature that is goats.
Yep. You name it, they will tear it down. We had, even last year, late last fall, I was still recovering after my C-section, and I wasn't taking the walks through the pasture as much as I do now, just to kind of check all the posts and making sure that everything with the shared pasture fence is as secure as it's supposed to. I had no idea that our like herd sire, our head buck goat Charlie, had been jumping back and forth over the fence anytime one of the girls was in heat and just helping himself.
Nice. Wow.
I had no clue until I literally caught him in the act one day, and I had no idea how long he had been doing it until one of our girls gave birth to a full-term baby a full 2 months early.
Oh, my God.
You should have taken one of those, like, shaming pictures, like a note like, I'm a horny goat and I keep jumping the fence. Shame me.
Yes. He's terrible. He is one of the greatest goats ever, but just not, I have to go out there and check those fences constantly, and we actually just sold one of the bucks that was causing a lot of issues with the fencing because he had big horns and he was tearing the fencing down, and come to find out now, I got a pregnant goat.
Yeah, the term horny old goat has nothing to do with their headgear.
Oh, yeah.
Well, last time that he hopped over, yeah, I guess he took care of business, because now I'm going to have some babies, looks like, in about 3 weeks to a month.
Nice.
They never stop surprising you. They never keep you, they never let you get too comfortable. They always find a new way out that we actually had one goat figure out how to open up the latches inside the barn, that she could, even though the latch was on the outside, she knew how to push the gate just so and lift it so that it would pop the latch over the top.
Yeah, and that raptor analogy you said earlier, dude, it was very apt. That one can open doors.
See, to be honest, the more you talk about goats, the least I want them. And on that, on my upcoming homestead project, my business partner in it is really keen to get goats. And I'm not so much so. I don't know if I want goats. So do you have any tips, any like lessons you've learned for goats besides just ensure the fencing is good?
Invest in good fencing. I mean, and that even goes beyond just making sure the fencing is good. Invest in the good stuff. Just because, I mean, we tried to cut corners. We were about to close on our house in Colorado to sell it, trying to save money. Yeah, that ended up biting us in the ass. That we ended up spending three times as much just trying to repair what got being damaged based on us trying to cut corners.
Yeah, you spend your money on the cheap fencing, then you spend your money repairing the cheap fencing before you finally have to say screw it and you have to spend your money on the good fencing.
Exactly. There's something, I mean, with goats, if you did decide to get goats that have toys and have things to play with and have room, they don't escape. We really don't have any issues. Now that we've gotten rid of the one goat that kept using his big giant horns to rip the welded wire fencing off of the wooden post, now we really aren't having any issues aside from one little baby goat that can squeak through the fencing and help herself to hay and then go back through. Give them toys. Make sure they have things to climb on. They love the little Quonset hut, you know, big sticks.
Mm-hmm.
They like to carry them around the house like dogs, you know. Just give them something to do, and you won't have the kind of mischief and mayhem that you'd have otherwise.
Yeah, the goat I used to own, we had a hole in the fence that I would have swore a cat would have had trouble getting through, and this goat could squeeze through it every time my back was turned. God only knows how many times we would come home and see the goat running back toward the fence.
Oh, wow.
Oh, crap, they're home, they're home.
Mike kept getting all these farm animals, and I was like, why do you have a chicken? Why do you have goats? He's like, oh, they're just my pets. And I'm like, oh, well, if you get tired of them, can I eat them? No, they're my pets.
Yeah. Everybody else raises them as livestock. I was raising them as pets. At one point, I had four chickens. I got four baby chicks. Somehow, I don't know how, I guess just luck of the draw, I ended up with four roosters.
Oh, no.
Yeah, they were named Thing, It, What, and Huh. No, Thing, he was, I got him first before I got the other three, and he was so smart. It was funny. He was kind of, he was the only rooster I've ever seen that was toilet trained.
Oh, wow.
No, I didn't know anything about chickens, and basically I raised him inside the house sitting on my shoulder with him nestled up under my long hair at this point. I was petting him all the time. At night, I would put him in our spare bathroom. He would perch up on the toilet with his butt hanging over the bowl. And in the morning, I'd come, I'd let him out, and just flush the toilet.
That's awesome.
No, I miss that rooster. He died a few years back, but no, he was awesome. And I'm like, wow, chickens are really easy, and they're housebroken. This is all, yeah, I learned that was not true with all chickens.
And you didn't let me eat them.
No, I did not let you eat them.
Terrible. People are always telling us that, too, that, oh, you know, you got, that looks like lots of meat, you know, out there with big economic downturn. Oh, you got lots of groceries out there in the barn. And our 9-year-old daughter will just look them straight in the eye and say, no, well, look, we're going to eat the neighbors first.
There you go. See, I've actually got this one cousin-in-law, I guess, for the lack of a better term. One of my wife, she has a very young cousin, and her grandfather raises pigs. I was out there at their house one time, and she was showing me all these pigs. She's like, that one's Wilbur, and that one's Joni, and that one's Leroy. But come fall, that one's going to be ham, that one's going to be bacon, and that one's going to be sausage.
Yes.
Awesome. That works.
Yeah, yeah. She's raised it. She knew the score. That always screwed with me so much.
Right.
And she gladly ate those pigs.
Yeah. That's the thing about pigs is when they're little, they're cute. I'll give anybody that. But once they're adults, once they're fully matured, yeah, it's time to rock and roll. They're not so cute and cuddly, and they go full blown evil.
Oh yeah, and the last thing you want is some kind of 400-pound animal with a bite strength on it like that.
Yeah. I can't wait to slaughter a hog. Bacon and hams and...
Oh, you can't wait to slaughter anything. This man right here, he would love to bring back extinct animals just so he could eat them.
I do want to eat a woolly mammoth burger. Come on, Justin. Wouldn't you want to eat one? Woolly mammoth, maybe steak?
I think that the opportunity to make that connection with all my ancestors might unlock something primal in you.
Right. You know what? I plan on trying to get a wild boar hunt done only in loincloths with spears. You're invited, so come on down.
That's an absolute real thing.
Yes!
Yeah, I'm not going to partake. Nobody wants to see me in a loincloth.
Boar spears. No. We can get after that.
Yes!
I'd be the guy running around with a slice of pizza on the end of my spear. I'm going to be honest. There's a reason I'm the couch potato survivalist.
We'll get you in shape. So, on your homestead, and this is a question that I'm kind of thinking about more for me here, what are your most used tools on the homestead that you just couldn't go without and that I will need to buy quickly?
Fence, multi-purpose tool that we have.
Oh, yeah, fence tool.
I think it's just called a fence tool, and it's kind of this strange, it's like a hybrid hammer set of plier, crimp, cutter. It's got like a hook on one side, so I guess it doubles a nasty weapon.
Nice.
That probably is the thing that's used the most and probably the most used and abused.
That and some really good muck boots, like Muck or Bob's or something that's name brand, like the $20 pair of boots from Tractor Supply. You'll crack them in a month.
Yeah, that's a really good pair of the muck boots, and if wearing any other type of footwear, it'll just trash
them.
Yep.
All right, I was actually planning on getting the cheapest Walmart muck boots, so maybe not. Maybe I'll invest in something better.
Right. Yeah.
You should totally just man that up and just go barefoot.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, yeah,
just Cody Lundin it, dude.
That's what I'll do. I'll just go, like, knee deep into poo-poo.
Awesome. You have to have braids. You have to add the braids if you're going to Cody Lundin it.
Get your mitochondria going, man.
I'm actually going to grow my mohawk back when I start homesteading, and I'm going to like chop open a cedar tree to get sap to spike it up. So maybe I'll grow out one braid, Obi-Wan Kenobi style.
Are you going to get some manic panic to like pay homage to the 90s, or are you going to use like berry juice or something and dye it some sort of crazy color?
I don't know if I'm going to use any like berry juice in the hair, because maybe I'll just have like a chipmunk infestation then.
That works. Fire ant?
Yeah.
You should probably just use grape jelly.
Grape jelly, no.
Oh, come on. It would stick up just where you want it, and it'd be delicious in a pinch.
Yeah.
Hey, we make some awesome grape jelly around here with fresh grapes from Justin's grandparents' orchard.
Nice. So you could get their jelly and use it for hair jelly.
You guys haven't watched The Legend of Mick Dodge, have you? No?
Yep, you killed him.
Hello?
The phone just cut out for a second.
Oh, I was going to say, I got a feeling if you guys sent me jelly, it would be like Mick Dodge's jam juice. We made this with our piggy toes. Oh, man.
I just loved it. He made a batch of that stuff for somebody right after... It was he made a batch of this stuff with his feet right after he just... You watched him walking through elk shit.
Yeah.
Gross.
All right. So tell me about what you're growing out there and what you're raising.
Didn't he barter that jam for some leather pants?
Yeah.
Exactly. Exactly. It was that and some kind of weird tree stump for a set of leather pants.
I can't remember what he called the tree stump. But yeah, it's a weird cancerous growth on the tree that makes beautiful wood patterns.
Hmm. A weird cancerous growth?
Yep.
Did he call it ex-wife?
Ha. Cigar or something like that?
I believe it's called a conch, maybe?
I thought that was a shell. Anyway.
Who knows?
I'm sitting here pondering McDodge. But I'm sure he has nothing to do with CrookedTreeFarmstead.com. So what kind of stuff you got growing up there at your farm? Kind of stuff you're raising up there?
Not a whole heck of a lot, unfortunately, after this horrible, well, not horrible, but very, very cold summer that we've had. We had a full garden going. We had, you know, we still do have all sorts of bell peppers and hot peppers, a bunch of different heirloom tomatoes.
Nice.
We had peas. We had green beans. We had lettuces. We had cabbage. We had broccoli. We still have a couple different kinds of melons, only the melons on them are the size of silver dollars and probably aren't going to get a whole lot bigger before it gets cold.
What do you find the easiest to grow?
Thank you. Justin's going to go do baby duty. We've got
baby duty.
Woken up here real quick. But our big thing that we're going to start doing here is... we have 4 acres of open field that we partnered up with some local guys who are going to mow it for hay. And then we get, you know, a portion of that.
Mm-hmm.
So just going to do one cutting this year and then 3 cuttings next year of alfalfa hay. And so that's going to be kind of the big thing that we do here, at least for right now. That's about it for this year. Oh, we have cucumbers and all that as well.
Okay. And you guys ran, you run goats, obviously, you run chickens, you got turkeys, because you owe me one. What else
I
do you
know,
do?
And I swear I'm going to have to drive that thing down and, like, deliver it to your doorstep.
Oh, my goodness.
Because I'm having a pitch of a time getting it shipped. I still got that dang turkey in my deep freeze, just hanging out there, all shrink-wrapped and pretty and all that, but it's like the shipping on that thing is going to be, like, $200.
Oh, good God.
Oh, yeah, no.
Go get your damn turkey, James.
Yeah.
Drive up there and go get it. Yeah. Make them spend $200 in shipping. Go get your damn turkey.
Yeah, that's ridiculous. Stupid.
Besides, you need to see Michigan.
Well, it's like a 60-pound turkey.
Ah.
Good God. My son's not even 60 pounds.
The delicious is a colossus.
My mom was iffy about eating Sid. She was like...
Oh, no, Sid's going to taste amazing. We ate Sid's brother. In December of last year, and yeah.
Please tell me Sid was a turkey.
Yeah.
Well, Sid was an annoying neighbor.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's about all we've got going on right now. We actually didn't do turkeys this fall. We're going to start a heritage turkey breeding flock.
Mm-hmm.
Here next year. We're actually going to start a small flock of guinea hens to try and keep the ticks down.
Oh, yeah.
The ticks absolutely adore our 3-year-old son, and we're constantly picking them off of him.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. Yeah, children are insect magnets, I found, being a father. Let me ask you this. What kind of advice would you give to our listeners who wanted to start homesteading like you? What would be a good, easy way to start out?
Just do anything. Look at what you use every day and see what you can make yourself. I mean, we make our own laundry detergent.
Yes.
Whatever you can do, whatever you can make yourself and not have to go buy from the store, go for it. It really sucks to see people that are actually being really disparaging to people just starting out saying, you know, oh, you're not a real homesteader, blah, 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 because you still have satellite TV and you have an air conditioner and whatever. You know, it's still 2014.
Yeah.
Now that does raise an interesting point. What do your friends and family think of your choice to move out there and start this?
Well, my family, I'm definitely the black sheep. They're all quite white collar, you know, love them to death, but that's their thing.
Yeah.
I'm the weird black sheep kid that showed up in Southwest Michigan to raise goats. I'm the only tattooed, pierced up little oddity that I am with six children.
I think like with my dad, he grew up as a farm kid, and he kind of looked at us a little odd that we would put so much effort and time into, you know, creating this thing and, you know, having all the animals and, you know, doing the gardening and the interest in general. I think he just kind of thought that it was a little bit strange because in a way that, you know,
it's backwards.
It's counterculture.
Right, but
I think it's gaining a lot of traction now. But it's,
right,
most people are interested in a McMansion that seems to define some sort of success, I guess.
Yeah, which is like going back to what Cheryl said about, you know, just making your own laundry detergent. I've been doing that for, I don't know, the past year or so. I finally got on the wagon and started making my own laundry detergent. And after the first batch of having to actually, like, look up how to make it and whatnot, it's super easy. You do it in just a few minutes. And, like,
right,
I've heard people at, like, work talk about how, you know, like, you know, finding the money to get, you know, to buy detergent, you know, is such a strain. And I'm like, I probably spend, I don't know, $1 every 3 months or so.
Right.
Something
not,
like.
It's not much. And I think what is most important is that it's for people to have that aha moment where they realize that, wait a minute, I made something and it's better. You know, it's cheaper. It tastes better, whatever it is that you made, than what I can get at the store, and I did it myself. And I think that was what kind of really blew us away and kind of sped up the homesteading stuff for us. And we realized, you know, we made something better than you can get at the store,
mm-hmm.
and it was all on our own. And then you kind of realize that, wait a minute, you know, there's something to this, and this is worth doing. It has value.
Now, how do you make your own laundry detergent? Because that's actually something I'm interested in. I've never done it myself.
You grate up bars of felt naphtha soap, and you use baking soda, washing soda. Some people use borax, some people don't.
Mm-hmm.
You mix it all together in a powder, or you can also melt things down and make it into a liquid.
Hmm.
And just keep it in a... It's a random squawk that is actually a baby and not a rooster.
I was debating that it was a goat.
No, he decided to join us. Our one-year-old son, Ivan, decided he needed to get in on the podcast here.
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah, it's really not hard, and it's just anything that you can do to make yourself more self-sufficient is awesome, and it just kills me to see people being really disparaging to people that are just getting started, really condescending of, oh, well, that's nothing, I'm doing blah, 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 blah. Well, that's great, but don't tell them that what, you know, their effort isn't worth anything just because you're, you know, recycling your own pee for fertilizer, and it's just, it doesn't need to be like that. Everybody that wants to do more for themselves and get out of that rut of dependence, everybody should be applauded.
Now, that is one thing I've noticed. It's almost universal across the board for homesteaders, survivalists, preppers. Everybody that's not in that, you know, kind of counterculture seems to look at you like you're an alien. Like you're a blue guy walking a two-headed dog, is essentially the way people seem to hear. And I mean, and it used to be anybody like that, the doomsayers, whatever, they were considered to be, frankly, insane by everybody. And I'm kind of glad to see a slow turn in this direction.
Yeah.
Right.
We've been really amazed by the difference in just a couple of years. When we were living in Colorado and, you know, had a small flock of chickens in our backyard, people really, really thought we were insane.
Mm-hmm.
And now we're out here with, you know, 22 goats out in our barn, and we're actually, people seem to accept us more now.
Well, I mean, look at
than they did then.
Like, urban homesteading is huge, And I just think that, I mean, that goes to show you too how kind of, how much across the board it's increased in popularity. And I mean, I guess it serves as an example, no matter where you are, you need a huge expanse of acreage. You know, you don't need 40 acres to do this. I mean, people are intensely managed areas of land are extremely productive.
Yeah, I mean, not that I like them anymore, really, because they went crazy, but the Gervaises in Southern California were raising 6,000 pounds of food in, like, a tenth acre or something ridiculous.
Yeah. Yeah. Just so, intensely managed. And-
yeah. So I got one more question. My plan for this podcast was to break it into two parts, the first part being homesteading and the second part being all on the tactical. So that's when you're going to shine, Justin. So I got... The last question on the homesteading front is a question on behalf of Mike's wife, because I know you guys homeschool your kids. Just tell me a little bit about that.
We actually don't homeschool anymore.
No!
Yeah, we actually don't anymore. When Ivan was born last summer, you know, it ended up, and I know I knew you on Facebook at the time, James, but it ended up being, you know, kind of a hellish 33 hours of labor followed by an emergency C-section.
Oh, wow.
And when school started a month and a half later, I just wasn't, you know, I tried, and it just wasn't happening. I could not get our three girls what they needed to do done while I had, you know, a four-year-old and a two-year-old little boys just raising hell and a newborn. And so we kind of gave it a little bit of time, and it just wasn't getting any better. So we decided to just go ahead and put the kids in school for a year. And they ended up really liking it, and I ended up really liking the fact that I had a lot more time and a lot more energy to be able to put towards things around here. And we've been blessed just that in the area we live in, our local school district actually is pretty good. It is a rural district, and the class sizes are pretty small. The kids all really enjoyed their year. They all did really well, and they wanted to go back this year, and so they went back. But when we did homeschool, we did K-12, the online public homeschooling, and I think that's part of why we didn't succeed last year was just because that is so not built for multi-child families, where you have to sit there and do, you know, 6 hours of school with one kid and then do another 6 hours of school with another kid, and it just wasn't happening. But that was the approach that we took before.
All righty.
Yeah, sorry to kind of, yeah. Anywho.
Well.
Yeah, public school for our little minions for now, at least.
Well, you'd appreciate the libertarian spirit of it, because our kids were old enough, I think, to make the decision, and we asked them, what do you want to do? I mean, if they had hardcore wanted to, you know, stay homeschool, we would have made it work.
Yeah.
And, but, you know, we let them make their own decision.
We have one that's starting to say, I want to be homeschooled. I think I want to be homeschooled. And we just told her, we already got you enrolled. Let's give it a try. Let's see how it goes. In a couple months, you know, if you decide, nope, want to pull the plug, then we'll bring her back home. Not a big deal.
She's our hippie.
Yeah, she's definitely our free spirit. She's the one that would rather be out delivering baby goats with me than doing pretty much anything else in the world. Or up in a tree somewhere reading The Hobbit.
Awesome. Well, that is awesome, a libertarian choice to give them the choice between, you know, homeschooling or public schooling, and that they were able to make that decision, you know, whereas some kids were just, you know, since you did put that homeschooling background into them, they were able to make a smart, informed decision about whether they wanted to stay in school or they wanted to, you know, stay home, and that's that thinking process is what I like about homeschooling.
Oh, yeah. Well, and we did a lot of just straight-up unschooling.
Yes.
Where it's just, okay, we're not going to do diddly squat today because nobody can get their head together. Nobody I can't get pants on this kid. I can't get this kid to wake up. I just, you know, whatever. We're just going to do our thing, where we would end up out laying face down on the porch, braiding dandelions together and making hats. You know, nice. Whatever. Who cares? It's not a big deal.
Excellent.
That's the thing about homeschooling. If your kid's just having an off day, then forget it. You don't have to push them into anything. Mm-hmm. And the whole not having to get up at the unholy ass crack of dawn when it's, you know, -5 degrees outside, that's nice too.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, our producer's actually over there shaking agreement with almost everything you're saying. Say hi, producer Mike's wife.
Hi. That's all I've got.
Hi, Mike's wife.
Hi. No, I wanted to homeschool this year. It just didn't work out. We were trying to do the K-12, and it just didn't work.
It's insane.
Yeah, it's just cumbersome.
We would really like to. I think in the future, I very well see us doing, basically doing another homeschooling year, even if we just do an unschool year here and there in between years of public school. You know, I do definitely see us doing it again at some point, just because I feel like our kids kind of get to the point where they just need some time to really kind of find themselves again and not be totally led around by clocks and just have their entire life ruled by, you know, put your hand up, put your hand down. Yes, you can pee. No, you may not pee.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah, I think that's very important.
Making good drones.
Yeah, K-12 is ridiculous.
And frankly, you never want to have to tell a kid when he cannot pee. That causes young kids, young couch potatoes, to get mad at their teacher and pee in the back of the room.
Ah, oh, gotcha. Well, I was going to say, our 3-year-old son, that's pretty much my entire day with him right now, is you pee here and not there. Don't pee in this, on that, under this, in that, onto that. You pee in the toilet and that is that.
In your van? I remember that one.
Holy shit.
That's a lot of my day right now, is following him around, trying to keep him from peeing on things as he's potty training.
Yes. All right. And then going from potty training, let's go into the tactical world.
Tactical potty training. Yes.
Tactical potty training. Yeah, he needs a vest for that. Tactical potty vest.
Yeah.
I need an Israeli bandage.
I don't know how much you can say about this, but I just want to compliment you that, Justin, I think you have the coolest job in the world.
Oh, yeah.
Tactical potty trainer?
It's an absolute weird niche thing, and I feel like I was lucky to find it. There's not many people who work in nuclear security. I want to say, on my college courses, it's not an exact number, because that's not something that they put out to the public, but
yeah.
I'd say it was less than 5,000.
Yeah.
It's a real small group of people who actually do it, and it's bizarre. And if you've ever been exposed to nuclear safety at all, or known anybody who worked in that field, it's safety, 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 safety. Which is understandable because they're running nuclear reactors. But it's kind of a bizarre place to be in, because here you have a group of people that every day it's safety, 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 but you guys here to neutralize threats, which is a, you know, completely easy way to say kill people.
Yeah.
So it's kind of a bizarre thing, and it's all private, and there's some pretty serious stuff, but it's very much a very bizarre niche thing to be involved in, and I even from that branched off to kind of a smaller team of guys, and it's what we call the I wear many hats in this job, but they're the training team, and part of that is we act as the adversary team that we help assess the plan's defensive strategy by attacking it, mock attacking it, and then we also work as liaisons to local, state, and federal SWAT teams that if they were basically kind of be their guide.
Awesome. I was talking to Mike, I think last night on the phone, on the way home from work, and it was one of those conversations where I tried to piss off the NSA by everything I said. So I want to say I said the word terrorist 33 times, nuclear bombs. Like, the point I was trying to make is I'm happy to live in a world where the terrorists are so incompetent. Because if I was a terrorist leader, I would have a splinter cell group of people go around the America with rocket launchers and try to take out nuclear facilities. Because that's the biggest bang for your buck. Nuclear facilities and power plants. And maybe dump poison into the Hoover Dam. And just be like dick nuisances. So yeah, it's good to know that you're there to protect the nuclear plant.
Speaking of terrorist incompetence, and sorry, I don't not meaning to cut anybody off here, but did anybody hear about, basically, there was this is real legitimate crap. Recently, and I found this out from a Muslim guy I work with, a suicide bomber training camp, there was a very bad mishap that happened at one recently. The instructor accidentally detonated his own bomb, killing all 24 of his pupils.
Yeah, what a shame.
Well, clearly there was no workplace safety.
Yeah.
If they had all participated in their mandatory safety meetings and had a pre-job brief, none of that would have happened.
Did you guys see that picture on Facebook that it's a tiger or lion or something? He's saying, my new job's making a ton of money. I start selling exploding prayer mats for terrorists. Bam! As soon as you pray to Mecca, you explode, so.
Well, it's funny because, like we were talking about with terrorism and with nuclear security, it's odd that it's not secretive, because nothing about nuclear is secretive. It all has to be really transparent, because if not, it really erodes the public's trust. Mm-hmm. And, but because of the nature of it, nuclear security is just, it's kind of kept quiet. People just don't discuss it, because a lot of it's what is considered in the industry safeguard. So it's information that you wouldn't want released to the public. So aside from that, this is just my own personal opinion. It's kind of something I first came through when I got my Homeland Security degree. There's a lot of dangers and perception, and we're subject to influences from the media, pop culture, movies, just like everything else, how it affects us. And one of them is what do you think a terrorist looks like? And I think that it's kind of a dangerous situation if we keep locked in that a terrorist is a Middle Eastern Islamic extremist. You know, we believe that, you have in your mind that this guy with a shemagh and robes is going to, run down from the hills or whatever. And I think the reality of it is we have to look at motivation. And I'm not saying that there isn't a group of international terrorists that would love to crack open a nuclear facility. But what we have to think about, what's their end goal? And if you look at a lot of those, particularly Middle Eastern Muslim extremists, I'm going to end up on the NSA watch this big time.
Yeah, I'm sure I am.
Their end goal is to get rid of us, to have us leave them alone, leave the Middle East alone. Now, the really far-out guys think that, they can convert everybody across the world. But that's most of the guys that are actually goal-based, is they think that they can just end our influence, end our meddling in their affairs. Well, what's a way to guarantee that we will never, ever leave you alone? Is to make a nuclear plant have a serious issue where we can't live in a certain region of our own country. I guarantee you that we will never, ever, ever leave you alone. And we will burn the last round, in order to get you. And if you look at some of the motivations on some domestic terrorists, you have like apocalyptic views. They're not saying in the sense that they think the zombies, but they want to bring up about, like the second coming of Christ, or so whatever they do doesn't have a consequence. And those, I think, are the people that truly, for that situation, you have to worry about, because there is no long-term goal. It's the short-term, or maybe not even be so incompetent they don't actually anticipate what the real effects are going to be.
Good point. You know what? I didn't even think about that. That if the terrorists did follow the plan that I laid out, we would bomb their entire country. Gone. There would be nothing left.
Right. We just never, because it would be every day you'd be constantly reminded of who you need to go tear up today.
Right. And that was I like that you brought up. You know, what does the terrorist look like? Well, it's kind of is whatever the government says you look like. Right now, you know, we've been told that it's Islamic people. If a collapse happened and the government went, you know, ultra totalitarian, what a terrorist looks like would probably be you and me and Mike and yeah.
Well, you know, the first time I ever grew my full beard out in front of my mother-in-law, she said I look like a terrorist. Yeah. So.
Right. And, so, I mean, there's a lot of. You know, I guess that's the danger of perception, and on the side, and it goes into the tactical stuff too. Is when I was a police officer, we talk about it's an exercise that in as concealed carry holders or people who plan on defending their homes, it's an exercise any one of your listeners can do, is without any outside influences. Create a scenario in your mind, whether it's I'm at home, it's the dead of night, I hear a window crash, I, you know, grab my pistol or my rifle and I go to the window, I see glass on the ground and I see a human, a person crawling to the window. Now just stop and envision, think of every detail of that person and just think about that. What is that person look like? And you can kind of pick up on some of your own, just kind of how your mind envisions a bad guy. And we used to do that exercise where you would have 10 people. I used to be part of our own detentions academy. I was a patrol deputy, and that was something I taught at. And we would tell them, you know, you're doing a prisoner transport, and you and your partner are done for the day, and you guys decide that you want to stop by a gas station. When you approach there, to buy a pop or soda down there for you guys.
We're in the South. We call everything a Coke. Everything is a Coke here.
Okay. Soda. Yeah, they said that the store's being robbed, and the robber comes out. Now stop. Think about every detail. And the point is you'll see a lot of common things that come up, and it's a guy in his early 20s. And we say, don't be PC, you know, think of the race that you envision. And it was always, it was normally all across the board as far as race went, but it was typically early 20s. Hoodie was a real common, hoodies, yeah. Masks, things like that. And I said, well, and the whole point of the lesson is now, what if that person that comes out or that person crawling through your window isn't your stereotypical early 20s, late teen, you know, crackhead or meth addict, you know, you're a tweaker? What if it's a 50-year-old man in a business suit with a gun? What if it's, an older woman, and especially when economic times get tough, you're going to see a lot more people that aren't just predisposed by demographics to commit crimes. You know, the younger people, not a whole lot of job opportunities, they'll turn to crime. Mm-hmm. Well, that when the economy goes down, and we saw that in 08 and in Denver, was we started having guys rob banks that were in their 50s.
Mm-hmm.
And,
what?
And sometimes even older, and I think one of them, I always remember his, the media assigned him the limping latex bandit, and it was an older guy that he had a limp, and he used latex gloves. That's how they created that ridiculous name for him, but the whole point of that exercise is to kind reprogram your brain from these predisposed notions of, okay, this is what a bad guy looks like, because maybe when you're confronted with that situation, that's going to create a pause in you, or a part that's going to make you hesitate in a critical time, because your brain's trying to figure out what's going on, because this isn't what you told me it was going to look like.
Mm-hmm. I got a quick derailing question. Since you were formerly a police officer in Colorado, if you still have any friends that are on the force in Colorado, what have they said about the legalization of marijuana there? Because I kind of covered that before on one of the podcasts, that tax revenue has gone up and crime rate has gone down significantly. Mm-hmm. So.
I feel totally comfortable talking about that, because I was there when a lot of this stuff was transitioning already. So the reality of it was, before they really legalized the sale of marijuana, it was legalized. And I say that because the advocates for the pro-marijuana advocates were smart about it, and they realized that, look, we can't, the political climate isn't what it needs to be to take this head on and just go for full legalization. So what we need to do is we need to go the medical marijuana route. And what that essentially did, and a lot of people don't realize it, is that the state legalized, in some ways, the selling of marijuana. So they almost legalized street dealers with the medical side of it. People could become caretakers. So there was literally guys who were, and anybody and everybody, you could say anxiety, at one point in time, now if it's still that way, when the medical marijuana thing kicked off, there was more dispensaries, marijuana dispensaries, than there were Starbucks.
Wow.
This is Colorado, this is very much yuppie. I mean, they had every, King Supers had a Starbucks in it, so that should tell you how many they were, and it was like the Wild West. Guys were getting rich quick. And these caretakers, what they do is, anybody who has a medical marijuana card can assign a caretaker. The idea behind of it is you have someone who's dying of cancer or has a debilitating disease, they could assign somebody to go get their weed for them. And what people were doing then is they would go to this dispensary, buy the weed, and then they would charge the person who bought it from them a premium to deliver it. Now, these guys were state sanctioned drug dealers, and me personally, and I always felt this way, was that marijuana, I would much rather somebody smoke a big old ham leg and take a nap, or eat some food and take a nap, than drink alcohol. That's just bar none, because I never once had to go to someone's house and heard the story. Well, I was rolling a big joint, and I got pretty toked up, and the old lady started going after me, and I was watching the game, so I slapped her. Never once heard that. Now, I have heard that day after day after day after day, and it had to do with alcohol. A lot of the suicides and stuff I went to, almost 100% of them, there was some element of alcohol involved. Of course, DUIs. Now, driving when you're high is not a good idea. But that was I ran into some cases of that, and the people truly were not capable of operating a vehicle. They were really a threat. But it was always alcohol, you know, and it's just and a lot of the violence and stuff came from alcohol. Now, where the violence comes with drugs is criminals ripping off these caretakers and robbing dispensaries. That's why all the dispensaries had some really robust security. But, you know, you unfortunately had these caretakers or state-sanctioned drug dealers who were basically just easy targets. And it was really weird as a cop to see, initially, before the medical marijuana stuff passed, if you stopped somebody and you could smell the burning, the odor of burning marijuana and you could articulate it, you could search their car.
Mm-hmm.
And, I mean, so we were having people get out of their cars, patting them down, sitting them on curbs. Yeah, that's too loud, honey.
Sorry.
And we're keeping our one-year-old entertained. And we went from that to smelling it and then making sure the driver was okay. And just being like, and he's like, oh, it's cool, I got my green card, or this passenger saying, oh, I got my green card. That's what you smell is my medicine. And so really, the full-on legalization, as much as the national media try to make it seem like this is just this profound, crazy, earth-changing event, Colorado was already there. And a lot of the states that have medical marijuana, I bet if you talk to the police there, it's, you know, it's been that way for a long time. If you, it's just one of those deals, I guess. But it's,
awesome.
It's been decriminalized, and they even made it to the point where smoking a cigarette indoors, because of the Clean Indoor Act, resulted, I think it was like a $200 fine, and then they'd fine the bar, and there was all these things. And but if you smoke weed, and you had to go to court over your weed, it ended up being a $50 fine. I just looked at, why smoke a cigarette in the bar? You might as well just smoke a joint in the bar.
What can you say about laws?
You can just tell where that was. I mean, the penalties, they basically gutted all those laws, which, hey, I believe it's with the legislation supposed to be a result of the will of the people. And if people say weed's cool with us, it should be cool.
All right.
And I understand certain professions, maybe they might want to restrict that. I don't want anybody, you know, operating a train and being high, or operating on me.
Right.
But that's something for, I think, companies, maybe private entities to talk about and sort out. I don't think that's something for the government to just, you know, determine.
Right. All right, I got one more question, and then I'll let you guys. Well, Cheryl said you just woke up, Justin, so the rest of us are going to go to sleep here in soon.
I think some of my answers may be a little bit long-winded.
No, not at all.
You're fine.
We've had Paul Wheaton on the show.
Yeah.
So
yeah,
that man was long-winded. So the last question I got is, pretty much everyone that knows that's been in the survival world for a while, they pretty much have, you know, probably their weapons down pat. But what I've noticed is sort of transitioning into some tactical gear to carry that stuff, you know, plate carriers and holsters and stuff. There's a lot to choose from, and it's kind of hard for the newbies to get into it. And it, pretty much everyone that has got into firearms has a drawer or a closet full of holsters they will never wear ever again. So what are some of your thoughts on having, you know, worn this gear for years in the military and the police and now as, you know, nuclear facility? What are some recommendations and stuff that, you know, someone can get on a, you know, spend good money, get good quality, you know, but have like a decent kit for tactical stuff?
Right. Well, like you said, the stuff is everywhere, and it's kind of like that's why my blog, I kind of pun on there some kind of foundational stuff. I'm not too big on telling people. I can recommend some brands and stuff that's out there, but the whole tactical thing is it's a kind of a weird deal where you have a lot of experts and you have a lot of people that say they're experts, but they really have no practical experience with it, and that's one of the things I really kind of harp on people is the form. Educated opinion and to actually get out and use the stuff, and like you said, I'm guilty of that as well, and it's kind of a lesson learned thing is buying stuff without really having a concept of whether or not you like it or if it's something that'll actually work. I would say that one thing that they shouldn't skimp out on is for concealed carry is a belt. And and that was one thing I always thought early on that a belt's a belt. You know, if it keeps my pants up, it's ready to roll. I realized that that's not true at And if you have a kind of a shiny belt that doesn't have the stiffness that you need and the durability, basically it's going to deform, and you could have a rockin' slick holster. And for concealed carry, you typically want the pistol to be close to your body, and you want it to be secure, obviously. And by having kind of having a janky belt, the holster is from the way of the weapon, it's going to pull away from your body, so you're going to print more. It's going to be uncomfortable. And as guys know that if they conceal carry for any time, if it's uncomfortable, you will not wear it.
Yeah.
You'll find any excuse to stuff it under car seats or put them in consoles or for women purses or any place but on you. If it's uncomfortable and you feel like you're going to drop it, you won't wear it. So that's what I recommend to people is to really research a good holster. And there's some really good manufacturers out there. It all depends on a lot of the stuff is dependent on what you're doing. So if you're looking for like a good concealed carry rig of the stuff that seems to work the best and has the best bang for your buck, so to speak, is you're going to look at some high quality Kydex holsters. So there's a lot of really good manufacturers that come to mind. Is Raven Concealment is a really good company. I think G-Code Holsters, they make some really good stuff.
Yeah.
Tons of ones out there. I just urge people to look at the reviews.
What are you using currently?
Make some considerations as far as everybody's body types are different. Make some considerations on how much clothing you typically wear throughout the year. That affects your options if you go inside the waistband or outside. And that's if you're running a pistol. Also, there's a lot of options, Kydex stuff. There's some cool in-the-pocket leather magazine holders for you to carry a spare magazine. Now, as far as running rifles and things like that, it goes from stuff that is common in the competition field all the way up to, like, what you're talking about, like war belts and plate carriers and stuff like that. Depending on, of course, me and you, James, know of SOE, they make some rock solid stuff.
Yeah.
But it doesn't come cheap, and nor should it. I mean, the amount of labor and stuff that goes into it and the workmanship is there. A lot of people want to probably skin me alive for saying it, but there's a lot of good products that are made by bigger companies like 5-Eleven. Guys go nuts over that because, you know, it's made in China. Well, there's a ton of stuff made in China. It doesn't necessarily mean that it won't work for you. And especially for somebody who's just starting off, you don't want to drop $500 per se on something that you really don't know if it's going to fit your needs. Especially if a guy's just looking to maybe shoot his rifle at the range, maybe just a Kydex magazine holster, magazine hold it for his, they can just run on his belt for a single magazine just so you can do mag reloads. I mean, maybe that's all you need. I would say that look at the companies that are well known from law enforcement because, and I say that not because that's where I came from, but as you realize that cops generally don't have a lot of money. And so companies that are popular with law enforcement, typically you're going to offer products that are they to the level of like SOE or some other American manufacturer? No. But are they pretty damn good for a relatively inexpensive price? It's because that's the market that they service is guys that don't have a ton of cash, but they need something that's reliable. And guys will poo-poo that and say that, oh, if you run Condor gear, that's airsoft quality. Well, airsoft guys run their stuff hard.
I actually just saw a video.
There's some airsoft guys out there that run their shit harder than 90% of the guys who just go to the range and just throw their shit in the trunk.
Right.
And, I mean, they're crawling on the ground, jumping, banging into stuff. And so that's kind of my, I guess, my take on that is I would look, explore stuff like I mean, really just ask yourself, what do I need to do? If I'm just going to go to the range and just practice some and basic stuff, and I'm just doing mag reloads, maybe I don't need the full warfighter kit. I don't need to dress like a Navy SEAL. I just need something simple or something I can conceal. Or if they're a cop, maybe they're trying to build a quick throw-on kit for like an active shooter or something like that. It's a tough question because it all just depends. But that's why I recommend some of the brands and some of the places to look for are the ones that are popular with law enforcement. And at least, if anything, if you buy something that within your price range, maybe not the greatest, you can upgrade it.
Right.
You get an idea of how this runs. You know, if you buy a chest rig, you maybe buy an expensive one, and you're like, yeah, I don't like the quality of this, but I like what it does for me, what it allows me to do. Then maybe later on you can invest in a more expensive one.
All right. That was an amazing answer. I think you covered everything. And with that, we're in like a 100-degree room, so we're going to wrap up now, guys.
All right, but it has been a pleasure having you on the show. Let's tell our listeners where they can find out about what you got going on up there.
Well, our website is www.crookedtreefarmstead.com.
Awesome. And I'll have links to that and your Facebook, where you post goat pictures all the time.
Yes, many, many goat pictures.
All right.
And I feel fortunate. I feel blessed. And as much as we have got to have the only podcast in existence where somebody is talking about terrorism with a baby giggling in the background.
Yes.
That...
I about laughed my butt off at that one.
That was my wife is sitting here desperately trying to choke back laughter. Yeah, okay. I thought she was going to black out for a minute there.
I think your other kids might be jealous, being that Ivan there is now a celebrity on the internet.
Oh, well, they all wanted to be out here. They all wanted to be a part of it, and we had to say no, and it's actually got 7-year-old daughter is pretty pissed off at us at the moment for not letting her be a part of it.
Is that the one that stole the Survival Punk patch and ran with it?
Yes.
Awesome. Yes. All right, it's been good talking to you guys. Have a good night.
You too. Good talking to you, too.
Take care. All right.